a recent report from the Institute of Medicine called Retooling for an Aging America, Building the Healthcare Workforce, should strike fear in the hearts of every American who has a loved one over the age of 50 or 55. Commissioned by the American Geriatric Society, the report confirms what many families are feeling and doctors have known. There's an inadequate workforce to attend to the health and medical needs of an aging population. That's we baby boomers. Not enough healthcare workers, such as physicians, nurses, aides, physical therapists, even in nursing homes. For example, nursing homes were built for a different generation. These facilities are no longer appropriate for the current aging population. Patients require complex medical care beyond what they needed years ago in inadequate facilities by workers who are not always prepared to meet their needs. Exacerbating the problem is the fact that medical science helps us live longer, but it's a two-edged sword because we've ignored the consequences and we're not prepared. We've asked Dr. Sharon Brangman, geriatrician and professor of medicine from SUNY Upstate, to take us behind this very frightening headline. Good morning, Dr. Brangman.
Good morning.
There's a term that came out of this report. It kind of describes this oncoming tidal wave. What was that term?
Well, it's been called a silver tsunami.
Silver tsunami.
The fastest growing segment of our population are those people who are 85 and older. So we have the oldest of the old increasing in significant numbers and few people who are interested or even willing to take care of them.
You know, one of the big numbers we all hang our hats on is the life expectancy numbers. And it's life expectancy, keeping people alive, making sure we take care of their chronic conditions, things that just a generation or two ago they would have died earlier from. But as a result, now they're older and now we really don't have the best ways to take care of them, do we?
We've had a big focus on acute medical care. And acute medical care are those things that take an intervention, they seem to get better, and then they go away. But as you live longer, you tend to get more and more medical problems, and the list can get very large. So it is not unusual for me to see an 88-year-old person in my office who has 5, 6, or 7 different chronic problems.
And so as we've developed these ways of taking care of these 5, 6, and 7 chronic problems, we've expanded life expectancy, but now these are folks who want to stay home. They don't want to be going to nursing homes or rest homes, as we used to call them. We're not prepared, are we?
We are not prepared at all. And most people prefer to be in a familiar environment of their own home.
Mm-hmm.
And care outside of their home is expensive, and care in their home is expensive.
Well, care in their home oftentimes requires a caregiver.
Exactly. Most people cannot get the care without some sort of support from their family.
And that support might come at the expense of someone having to quit a job, move home to a long distance place.
Well, we have many adult children who no longer live in their hometown. And so their parents may be here in the Syracuse area and they live out of town. They come home for a vacation and they realize that their mother or father isn't doing as well as they thought over the phone when they were talking with them. So they rush to try to figure out how to fill in these gaps and how to provide the care. And right now, in our greater Syracuse area, we essentially have 2 geriatricians on staff at University Hospital, and we're frequently booking several months into the future.
And if you have an acute or a chronic condition, you can't wait several months to get in to see a doctor.
Well, people usually come to us in a crisis,
mm-hmm.
and their problem may not have been foreseeable. It
mm-hmm.
could be very unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
Things change very quickly in the healthcare of a frail person, and they need help, and they need help right away.
So if we go back to this conversation about the workforce, first of all, we are short how many thousands of geriatricians in this country overall?
Well, right now in 2008, we have just under 7,000 healthcare professionals with special training in geriatrics.
Across the country?
Across the country.
That's it?
That is it. We probably need about 16,000 right now.
Oh my gosh.
We're very short right now. And in the next 10 to 15 years, that number of patients will double and triple, and we will not have enough physicians.
Well, if we don't have enough now, certainly we're not going to have enough then. So, of course, that begs the question, are we training the workforce? Are we teaching new doctors to become geriatricians?
We are not. Not in the numbers that are required.
But let me understand this correctly, because I'm not sure that it's the fault of the system not teaching them at first, because students are exposed to the possibility, but they're turning down the possibility.
It's a very complex issue. And just as any complex issue, there is no one answer, but we have the resources. I think we have the skills to begin to address it. we have the average medical student graduating with significant amount of debt. Mm-hmm. It's not unusual for them to have $150,000 to $200,000 debt. So from a business perspective, they have to pay down their debt. Would they rather pay it down in 5 years or 10 years? Certain specialties in medicine will give them the ability to pay that down that debt a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm. And what we need to do then is come up with some incentives that help students figure out a way to more quickly pay off the debt and therefore choose geriatrics as an area that they want to work in.
That would be one way. And so there has been a movement to look at loan forgiveness mm-hmm. or other incentives to help encourage young medical students to consider a career in geriatric medicine.
But, you know, I also have to think, if I were one of your residents following you around, I have a little bit of a sense of what your day looks like. And I have to think that if I spent time in a geriatric round, a period of time, at the end of the day, I'd be exhausted. And I look at that as compared to something else. Even if you're not talking about loans, if you're just talking about day, I think that residents must look at this and think how difficult it would be.
Well, medical training requires a long, hard road of deferred gratification and training and testing and often giving up many of those things that are important for balancing your life.
Mm.
So a lifestyle issue does become a very important component when a medical student is considering a future career.
And so there, as a doctor, when you're encouraging your patients to balance their life, you turn around and don't do the same thing yourself?
That is not healthy.
Okay. We have no answers, no simple answers, and sometimes the first step toward knowing what those answers could be is knowing what questions to ask and knowing what your situation is, and that's what this headline strikes me as. At least it gives us a better sense of the problem.
We really need a national dialogue on what we're going to do with our healthcare system as it approaches this silver tsunami of aging Americans.
Well, Dr. Sharon Brangman, thanks so much for coming by this morning and helping us understand, get our arms around this problem a little bit more. We'll have you back as soon as we can.
Oh, thank you.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's checkup from the neck up. A neck up Independence Day splash, or living larger, Sigmund Freudian fashion. Weightlifters have this expression, getting big, as in, I've been building my biceps with these 50-pound barbells, and they're really getting big. Now, making muscles big is relatively simple. Not easy anyway, but simple. Stress them by working them hard, then rest to recover, and keep going. Turns out we can muscle up our minds in a similar way, like Popeye. When he was about to wimp out to Brutus, he'd chug Sigmund's courage-building spinach and go with gusto. So basically, to build emotional muscles to live larger, we got to go to the edge of our possible and push like Popeye. Example, Dr. Neckup, you say? From your own life, please, you pompous know-it-all? Sure. A few years ago, I was in a group therapy training group where the deal was members, just like therapy group members, tell the truth. Yeah, psychologists do some crazy things, don't we? Anyway, at one point, I thought one guy hated my guts. Deal was, say it and check it. So despite my dread, I said, Steve, I think you hate my guts. Is that true? Yeah. Wow. Really odd, but I was relieved, and forever after, I've known what people think of me doesn't really matter. Got big. And bonus, me and Steve were closer from that moment on. Or another example, a few months ago, I wrote a checkup from the neck up that was pretty dicey about my fantasy of, well, I'll leave that one to you to fill in with your fantasy. You go first. My checkup from the neck up colleague stepped up and said, mistake, Rich, too edgy. Now, while I know they were totally wrong, and that one checkup from the neck of would have launched me into Howard Stern's superstardom, their leveling with me strengthened our team muscles. Watch your back, Howard. We're getting bigger. So if we want to build our neck up freedom this 4th of July, let's go to the deep end of our personal pools with that high diving board where since age 10 we've longed to leap into screaming thrill but were afraid we'd look dumb climbing down the ladder. And now, whenever we're about to pop the top on our spinach, our kids beg us not to get in line in our middle-aged bathing suits. So this fourth, how about we say, dare you, double dare you, double dare you with a cherry on top. Cannonball! Wow, what a cherry. I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for listening.